Welcome into Inside the Icebox here on the ESPN Houston YouTube channel. Joe George and Jeremy Branham talking all things Houston Astros. Today's show brought to you by Blue Star Tequila, the world's first and only night-harvested tequila. This is an all-natural and unfiltered best tequila made with 100% blue agave. You can find it near you at bluestartequila.com. All right, Jeremy, we got a lot to get into this week. We'll talk about Jake Meyers, what he did in Chicago, Yordan Alvarez landed on the injured list, Lance McCullers return, and plus we're essentially a quarter of the way through the 2025 Houston Astros season. But I want to start with Jake Meyers. Has he arrived?
No.
Has Jake Meyers arrived?
I mean, define arrived.
He's turning into the player we hoped he would, I would say. I think you and I both, when we've talked to Astros in the past, have had reasonable expectations for Jake Meyers. No one, I don't think, thinks he's an all-star, but are we getting closer to where he can just be your everyday center fielder and you feel very, very confident with him in the lineup from a hitting perspective? We know what he does defensively, but I mean, it feels like the hitting's coming around in a big way this season.
Isn't he already the Astros' everyday center fielder?
Yes, but do you feel confident in it?
I feel confident that he's a good enough everyday center fielder. I feel a lot of people want more offense out of every position.
Fair.
But he plays a premium defensive position, and he plays it at a high level. He was a Gold Glove finalist last year. Like, what do you want? Like, you want every player with an OPS plus of 150?
Yeah.
I know we want that, but it's not reality. Jake Meyers is – if Jake Meyers was a free agent after this year, he would get $15, $20 million. It would be an everyday center fielder for half the teams in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good player. Is he a defensive specialist? Yes, but he plays at a premium defensive position. As far as his offense goes, like, do I think that his OPS of nearly 800 is sustainable? No. I don't think Jake Meyers is an 800 OPS guy. I'd be happy if he was like a 700 OPS guy. Because if you combine that with his defense, I think he plays. Like, his career high in OPS is 678. He was 646 last year. If you give me a 700 OPS with his level of defense, which I think he could win a Gold Glove in the next 3 to 5 years, he is an everyday center fielder. We want more offense out of every single position. I get that. We want more offense on a team that doesn't have a whole lot of offense, which does put more priority on getting offense out of center field, is that the rest of the lineup's not hitting right now.
Mm-hmm.
But Jake Meyers is a bona fide starting center fielder in baseball and probably top half of baseball one. And I think that sometimes we forget that Jake Meyers got off to this start last year. Jake Meyers last year just pulled it up through his first 30 games last year, had an OPS of almost 800.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of saw this song and dance last year.
I agree, and that's why I know everyone was so excited. What, 13 total bases, 7 RBIs, 2 home runs. I mean, an incredible day, that final day, or over the weekend in Chicago for him. But we've seen it before. So I would say, like, I'm not all the way bought back in on Jake Meyers. I think the other thing, I mean, and I agree with you. He's a Gold Glove caliber starting center fielder. I think the reason why he is such a debated player amongst Astros fans is because when you look at this lineup and you say, where's the upgrade? Logically, I think a lot of people point to Jake Meyers offensively and feel like he could be the upgrade there. So that's where it's, now, again, is he a 300 hitter? Is he a 750-plus OPS guy? I don't think so. But you need it right now, because it's been a struggle bus for the Astros offense. So at least he's been a bright spot early in the season, I would say.
Yeah, he's been a bright spot. But why does the onus of the offense rely on your defensive first center fielder and not your corners?
I agree.
I know Christian Walker has a good glove, but you're supposed to be getting offensive numbers from first base. I've been happy with Isak, so I'm not going to talk about him. But your corner outfielders have also been pretty below average too. Like, Jose Altuve is Jose Altuve, but Jose Altuve is a below average offensive left fielder. DeZinzo's been hitting a little bit, but probably a below average offensive left or right fielder. Cam Smith has been atrocious. Let's call it what it is. And I promised that I wasn't going to talk about it until 100 plate appearances while we're here. And he hasn't been a good offensive player. So I'm not going to ridicule the center fielder and say that guy needs more offensive production when your corners have been abysmal and the guys that were expected to hit have been abysmal. Your DH spot's been abysmal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're getting nothing from your DH spot. You're getting nothing from, catcher is not another offensive position, but Yiner was supposed to be one of the top 5 hitters on this team. He hasn't lived up to that. So I don't point a finger to Jake Meyers and say, this is the guy who he has to be this. Because you know what you're getting with Jake Meyers.
Yeah, there's 4 or 5 guys in front of him. if not even more than that, that you need to rely on. I mean, really, the only guys I would say behind him would be Brendan Rodgers.
Second base is a problem.
It is a problem. I mean, that to me is the clear upgrade for the Astros as the season continues, as you think about trade deadline, things like that, as we get closer. And I know we're going to spend the second segment going over, you know, through nearly 40 games through the season, you know, where you can upgrade. I think that's the one spot that's so clear. You can easily upgrade it. But Jake's been good this year, and it's added bonus to whatever he can be for this team. But you mentioned DH. It's not been good.
No.
And Yordan Alvarez is currently on the injured list with right hand inflammation.
Is it the right hand? We know what hand it is?
I thought it was reported as right hand inflammation.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. Dusty Baker never knew which hand it was. I'll never know which hand it was. I got into some Twitter trouble.
I saw.
People were mad at me that I posted Yordan Alvarez's series of injuries and called them weird. I don't know why that's such a controversial statement.
Yes.
Like, aren't his injuries weird? Yes. Like, aren't they questionable? Aren't they puzzling? Aren't they mysterious? Aren't they hard to understand? Like, Dusty Baker couldn't even understand his hand injury when he had it in 2022. Joe Espada can't understand his hand injury now. Like, oh, he doesn't need imaging. He doesn't need to go on the IL. He's going to stay here with us. Oh, he's flying back to Houston to get imaging, and he lands on the IL. That is hard to understand.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, you can even throw in the, you know, Pillowgate in Tampa. Mm-hmm. You can throw in the fireworks in Atlanta. How are those easy to understand? I don't get it. Like, yeah, people are criticizing that I said that you know, he's an enigma, because those injuries are hard to understand and puzzling and weird. How is that debatable?
No, it's not debatable. Because I saw, like, the first reply was about, you know, all of his great moments. And, like, no one's taking away from the great moments.
Holly, but, like, got me.
But it's the truth. It's he misses time from non-traditional injuries. You know, this isn't Lance McCullers. This isn't, you know, Justin Verlander, who was, you know, obviously not super healthy his last year with the Astros. I mean, like, these are not traditional injuries. These aren't even Carlos Correa injuries. Like, these are just, he's just out.
Yeah.
And it's kind of odd, and there's not a real explanation. And he also doesn't seem to ever really get better. Like, it really seems to, like, always, like, this hand thing hasn't really gone away since the Dusty Baker kind of controversy that happened. We didn't know. Like, his hands seem to be a thing. And no, he doesn't require surgery.
Right.
So they're not, like, but that's almost worse.
It seems chronic.
Yes, it seems chronic. And it, again, like, is it worrisome? No, probably not, because he is going to have, like, you know, he's going to figure it out. But is he going to go on the IL for 10 days, come back and be really, really good, and then in 2 months need to go on another 10-day IL stint? Yeah, I think that's likely. I think it's just the reality of what Yordan Alvarez is. He's not a 162 guy, even if he's just a DH. He's not that guy, whether it's bad luck or real injuries. I mean, he nearly broke his kneecap last year. Remember that, when he, like, was on the warning track and he slid like it was an ice rink and he was totally fine?
Mm-hmm.
That didn't take him out, but his hand does. It's strange.
It's hard to understand.
Yeah, it is strange.
Why I call him an enigma. I mean, that's why the Yordan rules exist. Like, there are certain things we don't want Yordan Alvarez to do, because his bat's too important. I know he's struggling right now and all that, but he is your best offensive bat. He has to be good for the Astros to be good. So you have to protect him. How do you protect him? Okay, let's DH you more times than not. Let's limit how many times you're in the field. I don't like when he slides. Like, who cares? Like, oh, it's baseball. He's got to hustle. No, he needs to play as many games as possible.
Yeah.
Like, save the sliding stuff to the playoffs in a gotta-have-it situation. I don't even sliding in May 2nd, mm-hmm. Trying to get a hustle double. Like, let the big man play station to station. But yeah, it's really hard. And I didn't even mention whenever he jammed his finger in the door and had to miss a game. Like, okay, maybe that's normal. I don't know. But how many baseball players have we seen that have landed on the IL more than once with hand inflammation over the span of, what is it, 4 years? Because mm-hmm. the other one was in 22.
Yeah.
So 22, 23, 24, 25. My math is right. So he's had two different IL stints with hand inflammation over a four-year period. He's missed a handful of other games without landing on the IL with hand inflammation. So, and, like, I'm not saying the Astros owe us the information. Like, I'm curious and nosy, so I would like to know. It would make it easier to understand for me. Not that I'm, you know, deserving of that information. But it's really weird. Like, it's not surgical. He doesn't need surgery. But his hand gets sore? Like, that's kind of weird to me. Like, how many baseball players in their 20s have had this issue? I don't really remember that case.
I mean, I don't even think...
In their late 20s?
I don't even think, like, the 20s is a thing. Like, I don't... Albert Pujols, David Ortiz, like, think of these big power hitters. Bonds, like, I don't know, well, he cheated. But, like, hand issues are not typical in baseball. So it's just strange.
I disagree with that. They're pretty common in baseball, but usually it leads to a surgery.
Yes.
Like, we hear the hamate all the time.
Yeah, this is uncommon, like the way this is played out.
Like, the hamate's a very common baseball injury. In fact, you don't even see the hamate injury in other sports. You see it in baseball, and you see it sometimes in golf. But that's immediate surgery. Mm-hmm. Like, that is surgery as soon as they get the imaging. Okay, your hamate's jacked up. Let's remove the hamate. And it really is that simple. It's not, you know, it's not easy to overcome. Like, it's a, you know, you have to let the area heal. You have to, if it's not full removal, you have to let the bone heal. Usually, you know, they'll say 4 to 6 weeks. It's usually an 8-week injury because mm-hmm. the area is sensitive and you are gripping a baseball bat. So hand injuries in baseball for hitters are common, but it's usually the hamate. Two different IL stints with hand inflammation is very weird.
Yeah, it's, and look, and the Astros are struggling mightily right now offensively. I mean, there's moments where it feels like it's getting back on track, and then it kind of regresses back to the mean of what it's been, and they start slow. We'll talk about that on the show today as well, because I know Astros fans want people fired still, and we saw a firing, like, you know, down the road. So we'll talk about that as well. Before we take a break here and we hear from Blue Star Tequila, yeah, Lance McCullers made his return.
He did.
Finally made it. Goes, what, 3 2/3? He ends up striking out 4 guys, walks 3, gives up 3 hits, no earned runs against him. Obviously, that's the game that gets called early. What'd you make of Lance's return?
How do you want to look at it first? Do you want to look at it big picture or small picture?
Let's go big picture first.
Big picture, unbelievable. According to my research, which I'm not very confident in, he's one of 2 pitchers in baseball currently that have had 3 different procedures on his right elbow down. Mm-hmm. He's had the Tommy John. He had the internal brace on the UCL, mm-hmm. apparently, while he was having flexor tendon surgery. Kind of got lost in the muck there. But Lance McCullers talking in the dugout before his start the other day, it kind of came back to light. And then he's had, the flexor tendon surgery. The only other pitcher currently pitching in baseball, I think ever, that have pitched in baseball after that is Walker Buehler. Mm-hmm. And Walker Buehler hasn't had the same success as he had pre-surgery. So the journey back is incredible. I know that we mock him and, you know, Mocha McCullers and, you know, he's collecting money and stealing money and all this. But, you know, the journey back should be complimented. We should tip our cap to that. So I tip my cap to McCullers making the return. Now, like, what it means to the Astros going forward this year, like, if we actually, like, let's evaluate the performance. And, yes, you know, cool day, first time he's pitched in 2.5 years, and, you know, give him all the excuses, and I'm okay giving him all the excuses. But if he pitches like he pitched in Chicago the rest of the year, I'm not sure he helps you. You know, yes, he was 3 2/3 of shutout baseball, was very lucky to be shutout baseball. Mm-hmm. Took a, you know, final out in the fourth inning to get him out of that. Was the second or third? I can't remember. I think it was the second. Yeah, because he had a 3-up, 3-down third. He threw like 40-something pitches, loaded the bases. He was hanging sliders. His changeups were backing up in the middle of the zone. Like, good teams are going to crush him if that continues. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, excuses, hadn't pitched in a big league game in 2.5 years, cool day. You know, maybe that's not what he's going to look like the rest of the year. All I'm saying is if he looks like that we saw on Sunday, I don't think he helps the Astros.
Yeah, I think the stuff looked early. It looked good, and we saw the movement from some of his stuff. It was Lance McCullers vintage nasty, some of the pitches there. My thing with Lance has always been the same, and where I think he puts a lot of pressure on a team's bullpen because of this performance. This is a typical performance. I mean, typically he might go 4 2/3, but not getting past the fifth inning is very common in Lance McCullers starts because sometimes it's a labor to get through there. You know, he's going to walk 2 guys and get out of it a lot of times too, but he's going to have high pitch counts. It's very common. So I think for his first start back, it's grading on like a curve. Mm-hmm. It's an A, right?
Sure.
Because it's like he's on the mound. You get credit for being in attendance and on the field. But now it's to see what's next. What does the next start look like? And how does it develop going forward to get a real picture of it? But it was nice at least to see him back on the mound.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and I'm really, like, I'm happy for him, for sure.
Absolutely.
And like, it's the step in the right direction. And Lance McCullers knows he didn't pitch, like, you know, lights out. He talked about it in the postgame. He's like, I wasn't crisp. Yeah, he wasn't crisp. He knows that he has to be better than that performance or he's going to get hit. He's going to get hit hard. So, I mean, it's too early to tell what he's going to look like 2025. It just has to be better than what it was. It's great for the journey. It's great for the Lance McCullers story. Great comeback, all of that for, you know, the adversity and the injury that he's been through. But if we're talking about what it means for the 2025 Astros, and he'd be the first person to tell you this and told it to the media right after his start, is that he'll have to be more crisp.
Totally agree. All right, this episode of Inside the Icebox brought to you by Blue Star Tequila, the world's first and only night harvested tequila. What is night harvesting? Let's find out.
In the highlands of Jalisco, as the fierce heat of day fades into dusk, the sun dips below the horizon, and our jimadores begin their work. Harvesting our precious agave azul beneath the glow of stars, while the night air is cool and calm. Away from the harsh heat of the sun, we protect our agave's freshness, locking in essential natural properties and sweetness, and preserving its unique flavor profile. This world-first practice has been warmly embraced by our jimadores, who relish the soothing embrace of evening's cool air as they work beneath the moonlight. 100% agave azul. Night harvested, unfiltered, and additive-free. We invite you to taste the Blue Star difference.
All right, so we are 36 games into the season as this podcast and radio show is airing, Jeremy Brainerd. So we are roughly a quarter of the way through the season. By the time we get here next week, we'll be more than a quarter of the way through the season. What's been the most positive thing? Let's start there for the Houston Astros as a whole. Number one positive thing for you.
Can you give me the whole just pitching staff?
Yeah,
can
that's
I
go, fine.
Can go, I go for the it. Entirety of the pitching? I think the entirety of the pitching staff has been very good. You have your ebbs and flows within it. Fromber's been a little bit down, but I expect Fromber to be fine. Like, Fromber always has a series of starts where it's kind of like, yeah, you don't like this version of Fromber, and then you look up at the end of the year, Fromber's got a 3.5 ERA and has logged 200 innings. I trust Fromber to be right there. Hunter Brown has emerged to be one of the best pitchers in all of baseball, and that's not hyperbolic. That is legit. Hunter Brown is one of the best pitchers in baseball. In the middle and the back of your rotation has been fine. Like, Wisniewski's been pretty good. I know he had to miss a start because they're kind of watching him because his velo was down, like, which is something to keep an eye on. Blanco, I think, has been, solid, probably a regression to the means, but mm-hmm. I never expected Ronel Blanco to have the year that he had in 2024. Even Gusto has been fine in, one of his starts, a couple of his starts. I thought he looked pretty good. You're still waiting to get Arrigetti back. And then you got Lance for at least depth. But then the bullpen's been very good. Like, we had questions. Who else is going to step up in this bullpen? Hader's been terrific. Abreu's been terrific, as we hoped and expected them to be. But Brian King has kind of emerged into mm-hmm. that seventh inning guy. You found some guys who are helping, like Logan Van Wy. Why is his name pronounced that way? No idea. But Logan Van Wy, who's been pretty good. Caleb Ort's getting back, and I like his stuff. Mm-hmm. Whitley's kind of disappointing because of the knee injury. But this pitching staff in totality has been very good.
Yeah, I think especially the back end there. I mean, Josh Hader and Brian Abreu. You have four or five guys right now on the pitching staff that have a below two ERA.
Yeah.
King, Hader, Abreu, you got Hunter Brown as well, all below two
even
ERA.
Even Okert's been good.
Okert, yes, as well. I mean, you've got a lot of contributions from different guys, and you're right about Fromber. Like, it's roller coaster moments. I know the trade Fromber crowd has come back a little bit. I'm not on that right now just because he's on the team. You missed the boat.
We'll talk about it in 2 months.
Yeah, if they're not in the playoffs. Is that where we're going in 2 months?
I mean, it depends on what the standings look like and your long-term realistic goals.
Yeah.
No, and I don't mean long-term in the future. I mean long-term, like, postseason. Like, if you feel like you can win a championship and you have just a slight piece of hope, you don't trade Fromber. But if you're kind of like fighting tooth and nail just to stay in the race, mm-hmm. and like you do have a surplus of starting pitchers, I think you'd be prudent to at least entertain the idea.
No, I think so too. It just depends on where you're at in the standings and everything. And I don't think you're gonna, if you're right there on the cusp of, if you're three or four games back of the West, honestly, I think you have to really fall apart for them to actually consider it with the current guys on the roster.
I mean,
I know, but
it's gonna be hard for them not to be in the playoff race because of the extra wild cards.
No, for sure. It does. I mean, and that's why the extra wild cards is, I think it's kind of neutered the trade deadline in a way a little bit, because it's like there's so many teams. I mean, I remember last year, it was there was very clearly like four or five teams in all of baseball that were like, that team should sell.
Yeah.
But the problem is the Rockies and the Marlins are usually so trash, like, you don't even want their pieces. So, like, it's not – it's kind of ruined the trade deadline a little bit. It's made it a lot more complicated for teams where, like, you have to be really honest with yourself. You have to be honest with the clubhouse. I mean, Jose Altuve and Yordan Alvarez would not take it well if you traded Framber Valdez at the deadline and you're only six games out of the division when this last season – you were 10 games back of the division.
Yeah, I don't care about players' feelings.
I know. But
my goal is not to make those players happy if I'm a general manager. My goal is to
win championships,
produce wins, whether it's short-term or whether it's long-term, and you have to balance it out. You're right about the deadline, though. It has gotten a lot different because of the extra wild cards. What you see now, though, is like a lot of contending teams that'll trade from like their surplus for a weakness to a team that has the surplus of your weakness.
Yes.
So, like, maybe there's, and, you know, we're 2 months away from this conversation, but maybe there's a team out there that is desperate for starting pitching. Like, Baltimore will probably be desperate for starting pitching. And they're like, hey, you know, we'll trade you one of these, you know, young players. And, you know,
especially the ones that play second base.
Yeah, and he's like an instant starter for you.
Yeah.
To where it's like, okay, you do lose some pitching, but you're losing Framber at the end of the year anyways. And then you add, like, you know, a long-term starter that's already big league ready.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there could be something like that. But, I mean, Baltimore, as I look at the standings, is in last place right now, which is weird because their lineup is so deadly. Looks good anyways. But, no, I think that you have to consider that. Like, Astros right now are three games back in the AL West.
Mm-hmm.
Wild card, they're probably right in the thick of things. But if you're three games back and you're hovering around 1,500 on July 25th,
mm-hmm.
I'm trading Framber.
No, I think it definitely is going to be a bigger conversation point. Especially, I think the Tucker trade kind of opened people's eyes to the idea of it a little bit more than in the past. Because in the past, it's like, well, no, like, just play it out, add guys, try to win a World Series, and they walk in free agency, no big deal. Well, Dana Brown clearly is going to handle things differently, as he did with Kyle Tucker, and I think that's going to open people's minds to the idea of that. But we got a while to go, I think.
2 months. 2 months. 2 months minimum.
Biggest positive for me, besides pitching, Jeremy Payne. Hitting .281 as we record this on the season. The bat looks much better. The on-base percentage is much better. Pleasantly surprised with what Jeremy Payne has done this year. I think we had a lengthy conversation last week about paying him, what he's worth. But he has been, to me, besides, I would say, Jake Myers, like, the bright spot of the Houston Astros. And even though some of the statistics are lower, he's been better than Jake Myers this year. So, I for me, he's the – just looking at the other side of the lineup, of the lineup card here, I'll go Jeremy Peña as the biggest positive.
Yeah, I mean, I have no argument there. Myers' numbers are a little skewed. Like, whenever you have a two-homer, triple, double game, and
like
you do
double
that
this RBI total,
35 games of the year, like, it's going to inflate it. Like,
yeah.
Well, like, I remember seeing the graphics, and I don't remember it off the top of my head. But, like, where his OPS was entering that game
yeah.
and then where his OPS was leaving that game was, like, night and day. So, like, you see stuff early in the year where it's like, okay, the ebbs and flows are going to not, you know, be sustainable, or they're not going to shift like that if we're talking August. I agree with you that Peña's been their most consistent offensive player. Like, Isak's been, like, consistent too, but Peña, in terms of, like, that step up
mm-hmm.
to me, has been I would agree with that. Yeah, the entering that Chicago game, Jake Myers' OPS entering the Chicago game, where he hit the two home runs, the triple, and the double,
mm-hmm.
was .617.
Mm-hmm.
It jumped to .780 after that game.
It's
so
a
like,
jump.
So, like, we're sitting here, like, Jake Myers is the OPS leader of the team. Well, he was, like, dead, like, he wasn't dead last, but he was towards the bottom entering
yeah.
the game. So,
yeah.
like, what does it look like in a month? And I think we all know the answer to that.
Let's go the other way. What's the most negative thing about this season so far?
It's got to be the offense from the key contributors.
Yeah.
Like, you go into the year thinking Yordan's going to be one of the best hitters in baseball because his talent is good enough to be one of the best hitters in baseball. You sign Christian Walker, which I was a fan of the signing at the time. So, you know, revisionist history, hindsight 2020, I get it. But Christian Walker, you were counting on to be a 25 homer guy, 800 OPS guy. He's not doing that for you. Yiner Diaz, you know, is he going to be rookie year Yiner Diaz where he hits the home runs and pop? He's going to be second year Yiner Diaz where he's flirting with a .300 batting average. He's been neither.
Mm-hmm.
He's been the opposite of both of those. So you're those guys were supposed to be batting in the middle of your order. You know, Yordan, Walker, Yiner, you're thinking those guys could be our 3-4-5 hitters.
Mm-hmm.
And they've given you nothing. So any team in baseball that went into the season with the middle of the order producing the way that the Astros are producing, you would expect them, you know, to be six games under .500.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a miracle the Astros are .500 with the lack of production from their guys that they were expecting to be good and should be good.
I mean, it's what you were just saying about the pitching staff. It's even more about how positive it's been. It's the reason why the Astros are where they are. It's the reason why this season's not unraveling in the way that it did last year, because last year started off as a total disaster because your lineup wasn't good. And you had starts where, I mean, you got guys not getting through more than getting two outs because you're bringing up guys from the minors, and your main starters are getting obliterated on a day in and day out basis. And Hunter Brown was a disaster for the first month and a half of the season last year. So that's why the Astros were so far back. And I know you can look at like where they were last year and versus where they are now, but the difference to me is what's in front of you is, you know, even though Seattle didn't add like a single thing, their offense seemingly is way improved this year. I mean, they are in the top four right now in runs scored in the American League. That seems unsustainable because I don't believe you can be that bad to that good in one season without making any major changes. And you have the Athletics of nowhere in front of you as well right now. And that's a team that last year was one of the best teams in the American League the second half of the season. Mm-hmm. They're like the Orioles where they've got a ton of young talent and they're going to start producing. So like I think actually overcoming a slower start this year, if the Astros don't start to figure it out, is going to be much more challenging. And that to me is the biggest negative, is that the people in front of you have gotten better. It's not like last year's where the Rangers and the Mariners, like the way they were playing felt unsustainable.
Yeah.
I think the Rangers are not an issue this year for the Astros, but I think the Mariners and the Athletics are. And I think that to me is the negative of the slow start.
I would bet against Oakland, the Athletics, Sacramento Athletics. It's weird looking at them and there's like no city name.
It's Athletics. So stupid.
But I do like their offense. Like they have some guys. Brent Rooker's a dude. Lawrence Butler's a guy. Like they have some other guys in that lineup. I question their pitching long term though. And again, long term, I mean the duration of 162 games. I don't think that they have the pitching that's going to keep them above the 500 mark that deep into the season. Although they've called up some prospects and some young arms, I don't trust their pitching enough.
They do make deadline moves in the past. Like when they're good, you know what, they traded for what? Samardzija 1 year.
I mean, we're going back like 20 years now.
No, I know, but it's still basically the same team, like the front office and ownership group and everything. Like they've been aggressive at the deadline.
Brad Pitt's still running the front office?
I think so.
Didn't realize that.
Jonas with the Browns.
No, I do like their offense. And they're playing in that hitter-friendly ballpark. Like they're going to put up numbers.
Yeah.
I just don't trust their pitching. And do you make those type of moves now if you're the Athletics? Like that seems to me like, okay, we want to put a good product on the field when we move to Vegas. So I don't see them making like these win-now moves whenever they're going to be in a rent-a ballpark for a couple of years.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think if they were in Vegas right now, you would see them be ultra aggressive that first year. Just because what happened with the Knights, you know, they were able to Stanley Cup their first year, and now they can't stop selling tickets in Vegas. Like if the Athletics are what they were in Oakland when they get to Las Vegas, baseball will not work there.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to be good at some point. So yeah, I agree. That's why you kind of hold on to your prospects. And my guess is like they'll just be kind of a middling team.
Same.
But for now, they're at least a problem. They're making life a little more challenging for the Astros. I can't wait to see the Astros, though. Hopefully Yordan's like good to go by the time they go to Sacramento, because
I mean
the ball flies out of that ballpark.
I mean I don't want to like sit here and like sound like I'm crushing the A's. Like I do think the A's can fight for that final wild card spot, but to me the A's aren't like standing in the Astros' way in the AL West or in the AL in general. I do like their young talent, but yeah, it'd be fun to see Yordan hit the ball far in Sacramento. It'd be fun to see him hit the ball far anywhere.
That's true.
Right now, it'd be fun to see his hand be okay.
Well, I mean, It's just inflammation.
I hope.
That's what they tell us.
Isn't it weird? I keep going into my little rants here. But isn't it weird they didn't want to do imaging?
I don't understand the Astros. I don't understand them. Like, it's nothing against the Astros. Like, you're right. They don't have to tell us things. But they hide things. It's ever since Dusty Baker went on the radio and said too much about, I think it was Yordan Alvarez, and PR stepped in and basically was like, Dusty, you're not allowed to talk about that anymore. We know that because he said it the next week on the radio show that I used to work on. And he said, they don't tell me anything anymore because I told you too much last week. Ever since then, they've been strange.
It's weird.
Discomfort has been their word. They don't tell people things. No one seems to know what's going on. And like, while they don't have to, it leaves Astros fans feeling kind of panicky because we don't know the truth. You don't know what's really going on. You don't know why guys are in the injury list. You don't know why things are, you know, while Kyle Tucker's walking out of the game and is going to be back on Sunday and then he misses 3 months. Like, it's It's just the way they do business. I don't understand it. I don't think it helps anyone.
No.
Like, it's like, this isn't football. Like, this isn't like if you're like Yordan has a bad hand, like Mason Miller the next time you play the Athletics isn't going to be trying to throw 103 at his hands. Like, that's not the way it works. Like, I don't know why they do this. HIPAA, as Dusty Baker would say, whatever. But like, it's just strange. It's just the way they operate. I'll never understand it.
Me either.
I think lying to your fan base just it leads to distrust amongst them.
Sure.
And I think for a team that is praised, I think there's a lot of people that don't necessarily they might love the Astros, but I don't know if they trust the Astros.
See, the thing that I go back and forth with, and again, like they don't owe it to us, like whatever, that it's their philosophy, is if they're lying to us about the imaging stuff. Like, mm-hmm. And I know that Yordan flew home and then now is getting imaging. Like, okay, let's go ahead and take a look at it now. But I don't know if that initial message is that they're lying and trying to cover it up or if they're really not having the imaging. And, like, the second thing is way worse. Like, you lie to me, you're a professional organization, you don't owe me the information.
Sure.
But I don't know if it's a lie or if it's incompetence. Because I don't know. Because, like, Kyle Tucker, he has a bruised shin. Like, we're not placing him on the IL because we hope he can make it back in 10 days. Mm. Oh, he had a broken leg 2 months ago. So I don't know if it's lying and covering things up, which I hope it's that. Mm-hmm. I hope it's them lying and covering things up. Because if it's lying and covering it up, it tells me that they're not incompetent, mm-hmm. which is the far greater crime. But then whenever they're like, oh, yeah, we don't need to give Yordan imaging, that screams incompetence.
Yeah.
The Kyle Tucker saga screamed incompetence.
100%. I mean,
so my curiosity if whether they're lying or hiding information or being incompetent, they don't help themselves out because we don't know.
100%.
Like if they were giving the information out and then now they kind of cover their butts on the back end to where they can't be ridiculed and like.
Well, okay, and even like weird. Okay, let's talk about before we well, the two other quick things before we wrap up today, but. One more thing on this. Talk about ridicule.
Uh-huh.
It's an interesting word to use. Because most people will say, it doesn't matter what you think. Anyone listen to a radio show or go on social media or anything and looked at anything said about Lance McCullers?
Yeah.
Well, if you're just honest, just tell us what's wrong with Lance. Tell us how bad the surgery was. Maybe we all feel different. Maybe we all feel like, you know, when Chandler Rome is putting out that Justin Verlander is having Tommy John, and then everyone says he's a liar, and then all of a sudden he does have it. Like, maybe just be honest. I think the players getting the ridicule, the people getting the ridicule are the players.
Yeah.
The Astros, I think, misplay it. It makes you question Yordan Alvarez because we don't know the truth of what's going on because it doesn't make any logical sense because of what the information is. So it doesn't matter. Like, yes, we don't owe it. But it makes people question the guys on the team about toughness, about stability, and about just what they are. And if you're just honest, like if you're just like, hey, Lance, his flexor tendon, they had to totally repair it. Like remember like when he was like almost going to start throwing again last January and then all of a sudden he was out again for another year? Like this is the truth about what's going on. Stop lying to us about Christian Javier coming back around the All-Star break. Just be honest and it won't question the players because you think Luis Garcia is soft when he's coming back after the All-Star break.
I mean, he tried.
And then now we'll never know when he's coming back. But we don't really know what happened. Like, we don't really know the truth about these things. Like,
yeah.
When they give it, they lead us on.
Some of those are hard. Like, Javier.
I agree.
I mean, the ETA it's for Javier perfect. Would be somewhere around summer based on when he had the Tommy John and, like, getting back to pitching for the normal guy would be around that time. Like Luis was last year. And Luis pitched in rehab games. Mm-hmm. Like, he was on his way back and then had, like, a setback. But to me, and you're right, it does put the players in a difficult spot because we don't know if they're lying or they're incompetent. And it's like, oh. And I point to the Kyle Tucker one. Like, the way they handled Kyle Tucker was unbelievable. Unbelievable. They didn't play him on the IL. They didn't place him on the IL. They're like, oh, we think he might get back before the 10-day stint. Like, we don't need to place him on the IL because we might want him on the back end of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's, like, in the dugout, like, limping onto the field after a walk-off hit or home run or whatever it was, like, limping, trying to celebrate with his teammates.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened, like, days after it. And then it's like, oh, later they found a break, and he's limping without, like, what's going on? And then the further it goes on, the more we, like, knew the Astros were lying. But also at the same time, like, you're 2 months out of the injury, and Kyle Tucker's still not back for a bone bruise?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, and Dana Brown's going on the radio like, oh, well, bone bruises are very severe. And then, oh, fast severe. Forward 3 weeks. It's, oh, yeah, there was a break there. Yeah. Oh, yeah, about that. Like it's really weird. It's really weird. I would call it mysterious, puzzling, and difficult to understand. The Astros are the enigma.
Time out. How much time do you have?
I have a bit.
Okay, so make sure you weren't.
Yeah, I got to leave by, like, 2:10 probably.
Okay, cool. I just want to make sure we have plenty of time. All right. 3, 2, and 1. Yes, Enigma, they are the Astros. That's not just Yordan Alvarez, but the Astros as a whole. All right, we got two more things I want to hit on today. One thing is what we're seeing from fans. The other is a conversation I heard on the Del Ole show with Sean Mapes about what happened in Chicago over
Featuring
the weekend.
Sean Mapes.
So I have a question about a take that he had or a question.
I haven't heard it.
Do you want to get to the more serious one or the more fun one first?
Let's go serious first.
All right, so the Astros can't hit, right? Mm-hmm. Either can the Rangers. The Rangers fired their hitting coach. Their offensive coordinator. Still don't really know what that means, to be honest with you. I don't know. I know what it means in football. I think I know what it means in basketball. I don't really know what offensive coordinator means in baseball, but their OC got fired.
Same thing, I guess.
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah.
And the reaction, of course, from Astros Twitter, and this will be a discussion, and, you know, again, Tyler Stafford, got his name right this time, and Chandler Rome on their podcast discussed that with Josh Reddick that you have to put some blame on the players. But as you see, Alex Bregman have an incredible start, Kyle Tucker, and the Rangers fire their hitting coach. I see Astros fans are just, they're chomping at the bit to get people fired in Houston.
I mean, Alex Bregman has his own hitting coach. He has his own hitting service.
Yes, but it's interesting. He did an interview on MLB Network before the season started, or maybe it was Fox, and talked about how he was changing, like, his elbow placement in his swing, and all of a sudden it's just, like, seems like to have fixed his problem. And it was like, why didn't that get fixed here? But, like, it's just, I don't know what to make of it, because it's like, they're starting slow, those guys are starting hot. I mean, right now, like, you look at, like, the hits leader in baseball at one point.
Kyle Tucker started hot with the Astros last year.
No, I know, but it's... The Astros are starting slow and the other guys are not. And then we're seeing a team in your division be aggressive, fire their offensive coordinator this early on, and just people are just like, they're bringing it up. This topic is never going to die until they get fired.
No, and then if they continue to be bad, they'll say fire that guy.
See, I don't think so. Here's why. Because I think this is typically how it goes, is you fire the hitting coach.
Yeah.
Because that person gets all the blame. But after you fire the hitting coach, the blame has to go on the front office and the players. And probably my guess is the next blame will go to the front office.
Oh, that's already happening.
Well, because of Christian Walker.
Well, that and, like, you know, roster construction, yeah, left-handed bat. We are starting to have the Cam Smith conversation of did he get brought up too early. So I feel like Dana Brown's taking some criticism too. Not as much as the hitting coaches per se.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's what I'll say about that. I do think that we, fans in general, overvalue the significance of a hitting coach. Can they help? Obviously, they can help. Like, what's the run differential between the best hitting coach in baseball and the worst hitting coach in baseball? It's probably pretty marginal. Like, 10 runs over a course of a year, maybe. Like, I mean, it's hard to define that. It's hard to, like, you know, try to figure out the math on there. But I would say that the reaction we get from the fan base, in every fan base, not just Houston, versus the actual value that it really means is probably very out of proportion. But what I will say about this is I think firing – coaches in season, it can be a bit of a rallying cry.
Mm-hmm.
That it can be a refocus and probably has more weight doing it in terms of what it means in terms of, like, the rallying cry aspect.
Sure.
As opposed to actually getting a better guy in that spot that's actually going to help them offensively. It's more of kind of a Hail Mary, really.
Well, and also, like, most teams would not approach it the way that the Texas Rangers did, which is bring someone from outside the organization in Brett Boone.
Yeah.
To come in and try to save the day.
Which, like, Brett Boone's an interesting hitting coach because one of his best seasons were...
With teams that were cheating?
I didn't say it. You said it.
Well, they were. But, like, it's like if the Astros even explore this route, like, they probably wouldn't go down that path. Like, you would see, like, a minor league promotion.
Jeff Bagwell again? Remember he was the interim hitting coach for a little bit of time? He's like, I don't like being working this much. I
forgot about that.
Yeah. But I've seen people like Michael Brantley. It's always funny to me that people are like, just go get the best hitter and they got to be a good hitting coach. Usually the best coaches are the ones who are lousy
players. What about Michael's dad?
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, he's the one that Michael Brantley gets all the credit to. So, like, why don't we just bring them both in?
Yeah. They said the same thing about Chipper Jones, that Chipper Jones wouldn't talk to the hitting coaches in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And, like, if he was in a slump, they would bring in his dad and he'd fix him, like, right away.
I mean, hey, maybe it's just dad. Like, dad saves the day. But like,
I mean, usually they're scapegoats, right? Like, those type of moves.
I agree.
Like, firing the hitting coach, pitching coach, offense coordinator, defensive coordinator. They're usually scapegoats for a struggling offense or defense. In this case, you know, Texas offense, Astros offense struggling. So it would be a scapegoat move.
Yeah.
Do I think that the Astros would be worse off with those guys? No, I think they'd be about the same. But, like, the message to me, maybe it rallies them. Maybe it gets them going. Now, I think May 6th is too early. Like, if you're making the move on May 6th or early May, you've probably already had the conversation in the offseason. And it's like, let's see how it goes. And then, oh, it's not going well. Mm-hmm. Hail Mary, out of desperation, try to shake things up, you do it. I mean, if this continues into late June, July, and you're still in the race – okay, like, I don't think it's out of the question.
Yeah, I my only thing is, like, it's been bad. They've blamed everything else they can in the world, whether it's the front office or the batter's eye, and it just hasn't gotten much better, specifically at home, and it's like they haven't made a change.
Yeah.
I just don't feel like they're going to. To be honest with you, if the Rangers didn't fire their hitting coach, I wouldn't be talking about this anymore because it's like I just feel like it's beating a dead horse, but, like, it's because it happens so close in proximity and we see a team do it this early in the season. Like, it brings up the question for fans of, like, why won't the Astros do this? I thought they were going to make a change last year, to be honest with you. I thought they were going to make a change in the offseason with the way the season had started. And, yes, it got much better. But then when you needed hitting the most again in the playoffs, it collapsed. And it was only two games, so it's obviously a small sample size. But, like, I thought we might see some changes from Joe Espada to really have, like, if he has guys, his guys on his staff at some point.
I mean,
we haven't seen it yet.
These guys are World Series winning hitting coaches.
I know they are.
Like, the Astros have been good during their tenure here.
Like
Snicker's been here since 19.
And no one's giving them credit last year when things got better. You just stopped talking about it. So that to me is, like, why, like, it's not a necessity. I think it could happen. I don't think the Astros, the front office, and coaching staff will see major changes until they miss the playoffs. Like, I really don't think, like, we'll be needing to have, like, an Espada conversation. If they keep starting slow but they make the playoffs, it won't really matter. Like, I just don't think the way this team is won so much, we'll see major changes. All right, last thing before we go. I heard Dell and Sean, the Dell LA Show, 10 to 12 on ESPN, 97.5 92.5, having a discussion.
Mopey and Mapes?
Mopey and Mapes, yes. I always forget that they call them that. Should Jeff Blum have taken the day off after throwing out the first pitch on Sunday for the White Sox? That was the conversation they were having. Should he have gone up to the booth after wearing a White Sox jersey and taken the day off?
Yes.
I agree. And I love Jeff Blum. I love him dearly. I consider him a friend.
That was a weird look. Like,
I thought it was strange.
That's a, like, and, like, I get
like, the video with, like, Dubon is cool with, like, going up to, like, the statue and everything and, like, but, like, it was funny to, like, see him. You could, like, see the Space City Home Network pole, like, popping out of the jersey. I was like, just give the day off. Like, put Sparky on the TV booth for the day.
Oh, okay. Because, like, I was starting to think about the semantics of it. Like, they're not going to fly out a color guy for just one game.
Yeah, just have Sparky.
That's a good idea.
And then Robert Ford can go solo for a day.
He can go solo for a day.
Yeah. Like, that would have been totally fine.
Yeah.
Or does that Bagwell do that?
I thought
that
it was
series?
A weird. Well, Bagwell's not going to fly to Chicago. I mean, if Jordan doesn't want to be in Chicago, Bagwell's not going to be in Chicago.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny that all of these Jordan mysterious injuries happen on the road.
Okay, real quick on that. We've talked about this before.
Make us
when
towns.
I was on the B's with you guys, like, this is something
doesn't
like
make us towns.
Yes, like, it's Atlanta. Atlanta was what, the fireworks?
The fireworks. Yeah, you went to the hospital.
I don't remember the.
The pillow was in Tampa.
Pillow was in Tampa.
Yeah. Remember he had that, like, the illness too, where he didn't go to Chicago, White Sox, like, the first two games of the series.
Maybe he's just
and then
sick.
He got better and, like, flew there, hit a home run, and then caught the charter back.
Yeah.
Like, he was there for a day. I think.
Maybe he's, like, supposed to be homesick. Maybe he's homesick.
I'm telling you, if there's ever a book on Jordan 20 years after his career, it would not stun me if they're like, yeah, a lot of these injuries, you just didn't want to be on the road.
Yeah, like.
Like, I'm not saying that's the case, but, like, you look at
okay.
It's not the case, but let me tell you why it's the case. Like, the Astros are on the road, like, next week, because now it's a 10-day IL, right?
Yeah.
So, like, he came back from Chicago. He's not going to be in Milwaukee. And the Astros, I think they come home for a little bit, but then next week they're back on the road for, like, the entire week.
Mm-hmm.
So, you look at the schedule of the games that he's missing. Yeah, scroll down there. Look at, like, so he's missing the rest of the – he missed the Chicago series,
mm-hmm.
flew back home. Misses Milwaukee, so they're going to come home for a little bit, and then they're on the road at Texas and at Tampa. And then it's like, okay, he's going to come off the IL for the homestand.
Yes. I mean,
all of these injuries happen on the road.
It does.
The enigmatic injuries.
The dots connect. They connect.
I mean, definitely tinfoil hat deal, Which, I mean, I'm not, I don't even believe it, but like if I believe it 1%, I'm going to argue it tooth and nail.
But like they don't happen at home.
They
like
don't happen at home.
Are there not fireworks every Friday at Minute
Maid? Yeah, but he's in the dugout by then. He's in the clubhouse.
There's a photo from like the first Friday of like
he's out there?
Him on the field like after the
no
game.
No way.
Yes. They're, like they're all on the field with like their families after like the first game of the season.
Well, it's only the fireworks in Atlanta.
It's only the fireworks in Atlanta.
Somebody diagnosed him with asthma.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what a lot of people thought it was at the time.
Like, he's got asthma. That's why he went to the hospital for fireworks. Okay, all right. Has there ever been a baseball player in the history of the world that had to get removed from a game for fireworks?
Probably not. Like, I assume the answer is no. But the answer was yes, Jeff Blum should have taken the day off after throwing out the first pitch.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. Like, I mean, I didn't watch that game live. I was calling U of H baseball. I would like to go back and watch it to see how they handled it there. Mm-hmm. Like, so he couldn't have been on. Like, he probably got up by first pitch.
He was up there.
He's probably
he was
up there
up
by
there.
First inning.
Yeah.
But I wonder in like the 10-minute buildup while they're on camera and stuff. Like, I'm sure Julia just carried.
Yeah, I think it was just Julia. Oh, Julia could have just done it with TK for the day. She did play by play last year. She could do color for a game. Why not? Doing perfectly fine. Can I ask for a favor?
To try to get like some sort of ring for Julia Morales Day?
Can you ask Todd Callis on Friday when he's on the Killer Bees if Jeff Blum should have taken the day off?
Yeah, of course I will.
Okay. All right, that will do it. You can catch Todd Callis with Jeremy Bram and Joel Blank every Friday on ESPN 97.5
and 92.5
on
the
Killer Bees. I know he is, but he might chuckle at it. All right, that will do it for this episode of Inside the Icebox. Remember, you can find us every single Thursday morning here on the ESPN Houston YouTube channel, as well at 6 o'clock for the radio version of the show as well. He's Jeremy, I'm Joe, and this episode has been brought to you by Blue Star Tequila, the world's first and only night-harvested tequila. This is tequila at its natural, unfiltered best, made with 100% blue agave and totally additive-free. Smooth, vibrant, and full of character. It's tequila the way it's meant to be. Find it near you at bluestartequila.com. We'll talk to you next week. Peace.